Hello, welcome to Meet Me at the Movies. A quick take. We're going to spend some time focusing on a particular film. And this time, Thomas, we're talking about the new Ghostbusters. This is a Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And it's not, is it Ghostbusters 5? But it doesn't matter because we're not putting numbers beside it. You know, if you want to count the one that was the reboot, supposedly with the all-female cast that actually did not really work. That's not part of this universe.
Which I actually kind of had fun with that movie.
Did you really?
Yeah. I mean, I love Melissa McCarthy, and there was a lot in the movie that did work for me, but at large, a lot of people didn't work for them. So
you carry a lot of tension in your shoulders.
I'm sorry, hello? Who are you? Holtzman. Virgo. Avid skier, gluten full, and 100% jazz to meet you.
Well, didn't pay off from a money standpoint, and so we had just a few years ago, we really did have kind of a legacy sequel that happened with Paul Rudd, and it was called Afterlife.
Ghostbusters Afterlife, and that was a tribute to the legacy of the late Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
The great filmmaker, actor, and writer who co-wrote and starred in the original Ghostbusters as Egon Spengler. And then in a similar fashion, what we have now, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, a few years later, this pays homage to Ivan Reitman, who directed the original Ghostbusters. And Ivan's son, Jason, now serves as writer and producer on the new films. Mm-hmm. And he actually directed Afterlife. But Frozen Empire, it's directed by Gil Keenan, and it does its best to blend the generations of Ghostbusters, old and new. They return to New York City, and you have some of the original cast. Dan Aykroyd is in here just having an absolute blast. I think Dan probably would have played his role for free. On the other side of things, Bill Murray probably had a huge asking price for about 3 minutes of screen time. Ernie Hudson's here. I enjoyed seeing him and his charisma. But I think for you, we probably had different reactions to seeing the blending of the generations. I don't know if it worked for you quite as well from what I heard.
Yeah, you know, my first thought after walking out of this movie, after it was over, you know, somebody turned to me, one of our fellow film critics said, you know, how do you feel? I said, it was fun, you know, and I did laugh. I mean, I had a lot of laughs throughout. I enjoyed aspects of it. Some of the pros for me, I'll give you that. I'll kind of dive in with some of those. I thought the new cast really did work for me. Paul Rudd, McKenna Grace, who we saw in the last one, Emily Allen Lind, who starred as a ghost herself. And we see this interaction between McKenna Grace's character and her character that had a really pivotal aspect, relationship aspect that was really interesting in that. I appreciated that. The initial story concept of the film worked for me, Thomas, the kind of the don't let the genie out of the bottle concept, that theme. But, you know, it wasn't a genie. It was an evil godlike ghost controller. I mean, that's what it did. It controlled the other ghost.
It was, I believe it was straight from Scooby-Doo from the 60s. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, that idea worked for me. And so when the movie leaned into that, I appreciated it more. I love the effects. I thought the music, the score was great. The cons for me, I think it had a, for me, it seemed like there was a challenge between finding that balance between generations. I think it relied too heavily on fan service. There were a lot of Easter eggs from the first film, which I think were fine, but there were just too many of them. I felt like it was just trying too hard to see how many of these things can we throw out there and how many of our old fans are going to get this. The repeat setting of New York, I think if it had tried to do something a little different within New York, that would have worked better for me. But there were these cameos throughout, you know, like the Ghostbusters being chastised in the mayor's office. We've seen that before. The ghost librarian, we've seen that before. The Ghostbusters destroying property in New York, we've seen that before. So those things just didn't work for me. If they had done maybe just a few of them, I would have said, oh, that was nice. But it felt like every time I turned around, there was one more, one more, one more, one more. And also something else that did not work for me was the Frozen Empire didn't happen until the third act of the third act. Yes. I mean, it was like, okay, I'm waiting and waiting and waiting, and like, oh, okay, now this evil is going to be let loose. So we were building up to this evil godlike creature who was going to put us into an ice age, and it happened, but it happened at the very end of the movie.
Yeah, there really is an extremely bizarre narrative structure. My friend Nick turned to me afterwards and said, did that feel like a two-act structure to you? And yeah, I think it definitely did. There's an hour and 15 minutes that is really just pure setup and giving us the stakes. And then pretty much, boom, all of a sudden they're fighting the big bad. And then 30 minutes later, movie's over. So I really, that was probably my biggest issue with it as a whole. But yeah, I think for me personally, I actually responded better to how they blended the generations. I think returning to New York City was the right call here. Placing the last film in Oklahoma, I also think that was the mm-hmm. right call for that film. Yep. But if they had stayed in a rural setting like that, that emotional connection to the Ghostbusters franchise would have dwindled because so much of those emotions are connected to New York City. And it's obvious that they want to maintain that relationship to the roots of the series. So it just hit me different, and I think it worked better. And I actually do think that the way Frozen Empire handles its tribute to Ivan Reitman compared to the way the Afterlife, handled the legacy of Harold Ramis, mm-hmm. I think Frozen Empire works better for me in that regard because, and I think really what that comes down to is this kind of CGI ghost creation they had of Harold that I know it was designed to be the most touching moment of the film. And I know that they had his family's permission and his family loved that. But just personally speaking, the uncanny valley stuff just didn't hit with me. Yeah. And for me with Frozen Empire and Ivan Reitman's, his kind of essence, his spirit throughout mm-hmm. the film, there's no physical representation of him. It's just really his heart and his heart in these characters. And obviously it was never going to be like, it's the different relationship between the director of the series compared to an actor like Harold. But I still think on a fundamental level, Frozen Empire handles that legacy in a more satisfying way.
Okay.
We just might have to agree to disagree there.
Yeah, I think we're definitely on different ends of the spectrum here. I felt that Afterlife worked better for me because it used the previous characters that we had come to know and love sparingly. They were there, but they weren't the pure essence of that story, and they didn't drive that story. They were there. They were in the background, and it was enough for me to say, oh, man, I'm glad. It was nice to see them again. This time, I felt that I wasn't sure what story was trying to be told. Was it this, this new story with this new generation? Was it the old one? Was it a little bit of both? I just did not find there was balance. And I also found that there was just too much going on.
This is the start of the apocalypse.
We might be looking at an army of ghosts.
We're gonna need all the help we can get.
We're the Ghostbusters.
Can I tell you something else?
What?
Buster makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good.
I think for me, Thomas, when I look at what happened in this movie, it all happened as a result of the Ghostbusters' own choices. And this Frozen Empire that was going to happen would have happened because they made some rather poor decisions in what they did. And yeah, that was also just one thing that stood out to me. It's like, okay, they saved the world. Well, they saved the world because they were screwing up the world. So, so anyway, I don't hate this movie. I did enjoy it. It's not going to be one I'm going to keep going back to. But I am glad I went. It was good to see the characters that I remember back from the 80s back on the screen again. But I think that this one just struggled to speak to me like I'd hoped it would.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we saw this movie a few days ago. If not for recording this today, I probably wouldn't even be talking about it. It's not one of those that stuck with me and is going to stick with me. I don't think I'm going to be having conversations about this anytime soon with anybody else at any point in the future. Yeah. It's just one of those that's not really... it was fun for a couple hours, but I don't feel the need to revisit and have extended dialogue about it. So.
Yeah, I will say this, and we have had extended dialogue about it, but that's just because we can here. I worry about legacy sequels. I get excited about them, and then when I see them, it's honestly a 50%. It's a flip of a coin for me on whether it works or whether it doesn't work. And you know, a few years ago, the Blade Runner Legacy sequel really was solid for me. The Indiana Jones coming back with the Dial of Destiny, that did not click with me. So I never know.
Yeah.
I never know. Yeah. But I'm still going to watch them. I mean, the Beetlejuice that's coming out, I'm going to watch that.
And what's interesting is obviously with Blade Runner 2049, that's Denis Villeneuve, one of the greatest filmmakers working today, coming back. But also... James Mangold is also one of my favorite filmmakers working. I had a lot of hope for Dial of Destiny, but that did not work on any level for me. And so you think, okay, well, they bring in an auteur director. Is that going to be enough? But not always.
But I'll continue to check them out. Beverly Hills Cop, another Beverly Hills Cop will be coming out. I'm going to check that out. I'm going to look for that as well. So I'll keep coming back to these films. Now, if they continue to do the spinoffs of them after I didn't enjoy them the first time, I probably won't keep watching them.
You'll go back to the next Ghostbusters, and I will too.
Yeah, you're right. I will. And I'll have some probably mediocre expectations, and then if it blows them away, I'm like, well, cool. All right, you got me back. Well,
one more legacy sequel, Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, absolutely.
That's just the perfect standard. It is. That is impossible for anybody else to reach.
Yeah, it really is. And honestly, when you think about it, that movie had every reason to fail for a lot of reasons, but it did not. And it brought people back to theaters. So, yeah, great example there. Well, Thomas, do you want to give a rating for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire before we wrap?
I will give a C+, I guess... 3 Slimers out of 5.
For me, this was a bit better than average. And it's interesting. We're both at a C+. But if you hear us talking, you would think, gosh, I was going to give this like a D. But no, it was, I laughed. I'm glad I went to see it. But I won't go back and see it multiple times. So, well, that is a wrap for this week's Meet Me at the Movies focus on Ghostbusters, Frozen Empire. And for Meet Me in the Movies, I'm Noel T. Manning II for Thomas, and that is a wrap.